Well, thank you. I'm really excited to be here, and I, like Katrina, I'm excited about the way these different presentations have come together and really complement them, each other. This was a work that I did under my previous position with the Health Department, and I need to recognize my colleagues. One is Pat McCann. She is an environmental research scientist, and she's the one that takes a look at the data that we get from sampling fish in collaboration with other state agencies and develops the fish advisory itself. She also has a great heart for education and outreach, and so it was really a privilege to work with her. And then Mary Elizabeth Berglund is part of a local health department in the state of Minnesota, the St. Paul Ramsey County Department of Public Health, and she's the public health nurse on the ground. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So, in Minnesota, we are the home of the Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company, now known as 3M. And in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, they legally disposed of waste from one of their chemical development processes, a chemical family called perfluorochemicals. And they were disposed of in four sites just to the east of the Twin Cities. And starting in August of 2004, we began finding evidence of these chemicals in groundwater, and as we did our investigation step by step and worked on protecting the drinking water supply, eventually it led us to sampling surface waters, and we found it in the Mississippi River and then in a chain of lakes that runs through the city of Minneapolis. And so when it was found in the surface water and then found in fish, there was a great outcry across the Twin Cities area, because Minnesotans, a big part of our identity culturally is fish and lakes. And so I began to receive a lot of phone calls. What about the Hmong? They're subsistence fishers. They're a vulnerable population. They're eating these fish. And what about the levels of PFOS, one of the perfluorochemicals, in fish? So as an agency, we began to look into this issue again. And while we wanted to address the issue of perfluorochemicals, really the bigger issue from a public health perspective was mercury across the state in fish. And so we used this opportunity of renewed public interest and county and city interest in fish advisories for the Hmong population as a springboard to go back and revisit what we were doing in the area of fish consumption advisories and communicating those for the Hmong population. In the state of Minnesota, we have two kinds of advice for consumption of fish. We have statewide safe eating guidelines. They're guidelines that will protect you if you follow them, no matter where you get your fish from in the state. And then where our DNR has sampled and we have specific fish tissue data, we have specific guidelines for those lakes. And you can go on the DNR website and find that advice. When the Hmong came to Minnesota in the late 70s, and starting around that time, there were also a lot of newcomers or immigrants from many other Asian populations. So during that time, we developed a lot of outreach in different languages for these Asian populations. But it wasn't as easy as it seemed at first. And there are a number of issues and barriers that we came up against. One is the difficulty in getting an accurate translation and getting it into language that people could easily understand. Another issue was low literacy levels. Hmong didn't traditionally have a written language. It was developed by missionaries in the 50s. And so some Hmong can read and some can't. And then there's different dialects. And as a matter of cultural pride, some don't want to read materials that are written in the dialect of a different group. And we needed to respect that. And then probably the biggest issue is that Hmong communication patterns are really based on visual constructs and face-to-face communication. So there was some success with our printed materials, but not what we wanted to see. At the time that we began to look into this again, we had a multi-strategy of outreach to the Southeast Asian communities, and this was primarily working in collaboration with our Department of Natural Resources. They have a whole section that does Southeast Asian outreach. And so they were working on doing newspaper articles, doing radio and TV segments. They did a lot of work with community events. And so, for example, there were workshops or trips that they could take on a bus, and they'd go out and fish for the day, and then they'd come back together, and there'd be workshops or filleting demonstration. Particularly, PCBs is not a big issue in Minnesota except on some of our major rivers, and so the filleting was targeted towards reducing exposure to PCBs. We did some translation work, but we did it mostly to reinforce messaging that was going out in other delivery methods, and I mentioned earlier radio and video work. The St. Paul Ramsey County Department of Public Health worked with another group called the Emergency Community Health Outreach Group, and they are targeting their communication towards these newcomer immigrant groups because we have a lot of them in Minnesota. And so they developed a 20-minute program around mercury in fish that was translated into 7 languages. One of them was Hmong, and also a 2-page information sheet. So we spent a fair amount of time looking at the Hmong community in Minnesota and visiting with many, many Hmong community groups, and particularly groups that were working in the area of health. And these are the conclusions that we came to. One, that health care providers were trusted, but when we tried to work with them, we found that they had so much on their plate, they really weren't interested in doing work around the issue of fish consumption. Written materials were of little value. Face-to-face oral communication was preferred. Participatory work was very important to them. They talked again and again about, we want to work with you to develop these materials. And that the final thing was that we really didn't have any good information about what fish the Hmong preferred and how often they ate them. We found that when I got phone calls, they'd say, "We saw Hmong fishing on the shore of Lake Phelan," and I'd say, "Well, how do you know they were Hmong?" "Well, they looked like Hmong." Well, we have a lot of different Asian groups in Minnesota, and that was just kind of their assumption. Primarily, we worked through some Hmong groups who had done work in the past and were willing to come back and visit this again, and a woman at the Red Cross who had done work with creating one of their story claws, like as illustrated in this slide, and she used it to teach just basic safety issues with them. So we used a group of Youth Corps summer volunteers to do a shoreline survey, and they found over the course of a day for just our initial interview, 44 people, 7 of whom turned out to be Hmong, even though they all looked Asian. That kind of confirmed my suspicions. And we just did a very simple survey to just kind of give us an idea of where to go in the future. Then we looked towards doing some listening sessions, and we did these with 2 groups. One was with a group of women who garden, and we sat down on 2 evenings with 2 different groups, and we talked about fish and what their concepts of fish were, the relationship between fish and health, how they determine whether a fish is healthy enough to eat. And then they started pestering us about recipes for cooking fish. And how does the government decide which fish are safe to eat? So we developed this little flannel graph story about how mercury gets into fish and how mercury moves up through the food chain with Auntie Tanny telling the story. And I was a little bit embarrassed to do it in the beginning, but it really got rave reviews. So that became a key part of our outreach. So taking the information that we got from those listening centers, we used it to create a mental model. And I don't know if you're familiar with this concept, but the idea is that people have a map inside their brains. They use it to figure out how they're going to proceed or approach a problem or solve a problem, and they use it for the basis of making decisions. And when I used it in Ethiopia, what I usually looked for is what are the concepts from a scientific perspective that are correct, what are the concepts that are incorrect and need to be corrected. Must be a roofing issue here. And then what is additional information that people need to add to their mental map in order to make good decisions? And so when we did these interviews, these are the things that came up. Fishing is not just for food, but in the United States, it's a good way to spend time with your family. They think fish are good for your health. They're very aware that the diseases that they're facing are very different than the ones that their people faced in Laos and Thailand. And particularly, they see a discrepancy between their older immigrants and their younger kids who have grown up here in the States, and we know that's part of the healthy migrant effect. They know that they can make changes to prevent disease, and they were anxious to have advice from the government. And also, children and women are a special group in their culture and require special care. They really use visual clues to determine whether or not the fish they're fishing for are going to be safe to eat. And they, if it's in a city lake or if it's a lake that looks polluted, then they think that it won't be safe to eat. And in Minnesota, mercury is an equal opportunity polluter. It comes in from mostly outside of the state. It comes in an airborne deposition, and so some of our most pristine lakes, because of the lake chemistry, have the highest levels of mercury in fish. And then the PCB message, which was 15 years ago, really took hold. And so the older folks tell it to the younger folks, and so they assume that if they grill to let the fat drip off and cut away the fat as they fillet, that that will protect them from mercury, and that's not true. Mercury's in the meat tissue. So these are the new concepts that we wanted to introduce to them. Appearance is not a good way to decide whether the fish will be safe to eat. They need to follow the guidelines. They need to choose fish that don't eat other fish, so not predator fish, and fish that are smaller and younger will have less mercury. And then the idea that our bodies, unlike fish, can process and get rid of mercury is a new idea. So we were really stuck on this: how can we know exactly what fish the Hmong are eating and how frequently they're eating them? So I dug back into some experience that I had had in Ethiopia with participatory rural appraisal, and I decided we would try it in the United States here. And so what we did is we made arrangements to meet with the Capital Sportsman Chapter of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association. It's between 120 and 150 Hmong sportsmen. They're anglers. They're really avid anglers. And we met with them in the evening. Our price to interact with them was an incredible dinner that we had. And what we did is we printed out life-size pictures of fish on posters, and we had those 15 posters up along the side of the meeting hall. And then we gave each person that came 5 of these green stickers, and we gave them the instructions to place a green sticker on the fish that they most like to eat. And so this is what it looked like. And afterwards, we counted the green dots. And this is what we came up with. And it was amazingly close to what the leadership of the Sportsman Club had told us. It's the first time, though, that we had quantitative data on what they choose. The second piece of it was to how often they ate it. And for that, we took our mailing labels and we printed out pictures of the fish. And each participant got a picture strip of fish. And we did 2 rounds. One where we wanted them to put the picture of the fish up for the time, the one that they eat most during the fishing season. And that in Minnesota can be quite expanded because of ice fishing. And then one that they eat year round, because we wanted to be able to include commercial fish. So that's what these posters look like. And the results were, again, they were consistent with what the leadership had told us and also consistent with the previous posters that we had done. We then had made a little, kind of a very hokey video of Auntie Tanny doing her flannel graph story of how fish get into mercury, and we showed it at the end of this meeting. We did a pre-test and a post-test to test what they learned in the process of our little hokey video. And so one things that were encouraging to us was that they understood that fish were good for health. They understood that smaller fish, younger fish, have less mercury. That was a change between pre and post test. And the idea of kids and pregnant women being a special group. They still did not get the idea that you can't just look at the lake or the location to determine healthy fish and spacing out fish meals. And that's our pre and post test. We had it displayed up on the screen, and the interpreter translated for them as we went through the questions one by one. This led to the development of a professional video There's a Hmong videographer in the Twin Cities, and he developed this video. We took my basic little story and worked with the leadership of the Sportsman Club. The president of the club ended up being the narrator, and now this video is available on our website. We also, for the first time, got more than a page in the Department of Natural Resources fishing guide, and we were able to get it translated into 4 languages. So we spent the summer, the next summer, when they were fishing again, reporting back to the community. We hope to do some pre and post testing if we get the funding with the DVD. And we've been distributing it off of our website on YouTube and then through the Sportsman's Club. And then we just received a rather large grant through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, and we want to use that for testing.
Okay, so we do have time for 1 or 2 questions.
Right. There's different dialects within the Hmong culture. There's white Hmong, and then depending on who you're talking to, the other group is called blue or green Hmong. And I don't speak or read the Hmong language, and so I'm not sure of all the differences. But I do know that often they will not agree to read the other's language. The video is in the Hmong language. The president translated it from our story, and he's the one that does the work on it. It's interesting that deciding on a word for mercury it took a long time to find a word, and what we ended up eventually doing was describing mercury and then using the word mercury in the video.
And so was the language white Hmong?
Frankly, I don't know.
Okay, a quick question.
Why did you decide to create this ethnic group? I'm thinking this is a minority in Minnesota.
No, actually, that's probably the largest concentration in the United States. It's 60,000 people. We also have 60,000 Somalis, but they're not the same. They don't eat fish to the same degree. Latinos is probably a bigger population, but because we had connections in the Hmong community, we decided to start with them first. And our dream is to be able to do outreach in the Latino community eventually.